Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation today with Tom DiGiorgio of Fairfield, California, one of the only pilots who can tell us what it's like to fly through the cloud from a nuclear blast. At hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you can find some home movies from Operation Dominic in 1962 that Tom's son uploaded to YouTube.
How old were you when you first had the thought, you know, I'd really like to be a pilot, I'd like to fly?
Good question, because I never had that urge. Yeah. Now, I learned to drive when I was about 18, and because nobody had it. Well, my brother finally bought a car, yes, a 1950 Ford. So in 52, I graduated high school. There was no chance. My father had already died. There's no way I was going to college. Although I went to a private school, a Catholic school, and they did a good job of training me. I get a job, my second job. First job, I was working in a department store as a stock boy. And I always checked the papers for a job. And so one said, machine shop learner, and it had the wage. And it was 25% more than I was making. So I thought, I'm going to go. And it was out of town. So I did the interview, took a test, and I passed. And next thing I know, I'm in a machine shop of a high school at nighttime from 4 to midnight. And the high school teacher is teaching us the basic math of being a machine shop operator. And then the other 4 hours, we actually ran the machines. Well, then from there, I went and was sent to a Piasecki Helicopter Corporation outside of the city. And while I was in there, I met a fellow that was in tune with me as far as everything we did. We used to have lunch together. And now I'm about 18 and a half, and he says to me, Tom, what are you going to do about the draft? I said, you know, I never thought of it. He said, well, you're going to get drafted. You better think about that. And so I talked to some people, and I came back. Next time we had lunch, I said, what'd you do? He said, well, I joined the Air National Guard. I said, oh. I said, what's it all about? He said, why don't you come down to the armory and check it out? So I did. And the following time, that he had these 2 days they go for a month. Every month a guardsman goes there. So I'm talking to everybody there, and I said, you know what? I'm going to join. And I did. So what happens? About a year later, they put me in cryptograph because I could type, and I was learning that. Never sent me to school. And somebody spread a rumor that says that if you join after 18 and a half, you can still get drafted. And he gave me an example of a guy 24. Well, that made me think, I don't want to get drafted because I've got this job already. And so I go. He said, well, go in your room and find a school that you could go to for 6 months, and that'll take care of your draft. And that's true today. If you can go someplace for 6 months, you have served your time. So I go through all the books because nobody wanted to help me, and I find the only school open was pilot training. The guy who sent me there just taught me how to drive a car. And why am I telling you that? Because one by one, he and two others saw that opportunity. Now, you should have 2 years of college. I still have the statement. But the commander can waive it, and he did for my case. So we go off to Sampson, New York, Sampson Air Force Base, one at a time. We took the train, I remember, and I'm doing one that passed. And I'm thinking, well, this can't be, but, you know, these guys know so much more than I do. So that's how I got into it. Still having, my plan was to go 6 months and fail, you know, just get out of it. Yeah. That was my actual plan. Well, we all have this feeling that, first of all, it's 3 months of ground school. And very strict discipline, not physical so much, but very mental. All the rules were from West Point. The Air Force Academy hadn't been built yet. I get through that 3 months of discipline and all that, and then they send you to a private school run by civilians, but with a military captain running the whole show. And while I'm there, I learn how to fly a Piper Cub at first, though your question was, I had never thought I'd be flying an airplane. And after about 8 hours, you have to solo. So I can remember that day. The Piper Cub is very small. And the instructor, we're on a grass field. So he makes me park the airplane. He says, I'm getting out. And I'm thinking, well, he didn't tell me to get out. So what he's saying is, you got 8 hours. You're going to solo. But he didn't want to scare me. But up until this time, he's always screaming in my ear. He's right there behind you about coordination and all that, everything that goes with flying. And he says to me in a nice smile, he shuts the door, he says, give me three good ones. Now that meant I'm going to go around, land, pull around, do it three times. And he's watching. Mm-hmm. So once I got the bug by myself, first time, I said, this is not that difficult. And it went on from there. And when I was in the actual jet flying, towards the end, the assignments are given out. Well, the only problem I had in pilot training was formation flying. I said, you know, it got me a little bit. So they gave me a check. They had to give me a check ride, what they call progress check. Mm-hmm. So they got a pilot from the other squadron who doesn't know me. And I meet him at the airplane, and we're going up to learn how to fly formation. And now if I don't pass this, I'm washed out. And when you know it, he's from Philadelphia. And we're talking about Philadelphia. And we're making all these maneuvers, and we're all done. And when we get done, he says, I don't see a problem. So he says, how close are you to graduation? I said, well, I already passed my instrument check, and I got real high marks. You're finished. You passed. So that was it there. So I did. And then they came around with assignments. Now, I'm telling you, I have problems in formation, right? And when they came to me, they couldn't pronounce my name. The guy would say, DeGore? I said, yeah. I said, I'm thinking, oh, they're probably going to give me helicopters or something. And so he says, you're going to Luke Air Force Base. I said, Luke, that's in Arizona, right? He said, yeah. I said, what do they do there? He said, well, it's a fighter gunnery school. You're going to learn how to shoot. You're going to be a fighter pilot. I said, do they fly formation? He says, every day. He says, they take off and land in formation. Wow. Well, I went there and I did 3 months and I got through it. And it's true. It was difficult, but I got through it. So now that's a year and a half of flying.
And what were you flying there at Luke?
F-84, F model, and then a G model. Mm-hmm. Now, these are Korean War planes. Yeah. And the pilots were from the Korean War, and they had some battle scars. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. I started with the Air National Guard, right? Well, that's where I sent back. So now I'm back to my civilian job. Mm-hmm. And everybody's congratulating me there. I go out to the ramp where we have our airplanes, and I see two different types of airplanes. I said, what's going on? I can fly that one, but what's this other plane doing? We're transferring to that. Well, what is that? It's an interceptor squadron now. We're no longer a day fighter squadron. We're like night fighters, actually. So that's what that plane is, that one that's sitting on the end. So now I'm learning how to fly using the radar to pick up so-called enemy and make a pass at them. And the computer will do all the work for you, but we squeeze the trigger, but we're not carrying ammunition. So the computer can tell you whether you would hit them or not. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did for the next 6 years. Now we're getting to the story. Okay, 6 years later, I'm still a first lieutenant, and I'm enjoying it, and we're flying a lot. And in fact, we had to fly on days we didn't get paid. The Air National Guard is under state rule, and they only have so much money. If you want to keep your squadron going, you're just going to have to do what we pay you with. And that's 1 week in the month. You get 4 days pay for that. And three flying training periods. That's FTPs. And we don't have any money for that. If you go cross country to another place like we did to Miami, you're on your own. Yeah, you pay your own hotel and the food. We'll give you the gas. So with that in mind, and after 5 years of that, I was thinking, gee, I'm talking to real Air Force guys. They get paid whether they fly or not. And I thought, this is crazy, you know. So I went and looked into the books again like that, and I decided I want to go in the Air Force, the regular Air Force. Talked to the commander. He tried to talk me out of it. He said, you know, I don't think it's the best thing for you. But then in the end, I still want to do it. He said, okay, I'll do it. I'll sign you off, but do me one favor. And no, he said, I'm going to do you a favor, he said to me. Can you wait a month or two? I said, sure. Because I'm going to get you promoted to captain. So when you go in, you're already one rank above what you are now, and that'll help a lot. Mm-hmm. But he said, so he got me his own, what we call billets. He got me the okay in the guard to be a captain. And then he said, wait a little longer. I'm going to get it federally recognized. So he sends my paperwork to Washington. They say, okay, now I can go. So I'm assuming, and I start to ask where I want to go. I want to go to fighters at MacDill, which is Florida, or 102s, that's interceptors at McGuire. We're close to where I live. What do you think they sent me? California. They changed to military airlift. Now, that's big troop airplanes, you know. The C-135, actually. It's a 707. So I learned to fly that, and then the next airplane was a C-141 right here at Travis. In between all that, they sent me to Vietnam. Now, I flew a 123 cargo airplane in Vietnam, and it had two engines and a small cabin in the back, and we landed at these little airfields that supported the Army Rangers, who were supporting the local communities, and that's what I did there for the year. And nothing ever happened. We got hit maybe four times and never knew it. It was probably small arms caliber of people near airports. And our wings were dry. That means that the fuel was not in the wings. So we got away with that. So it was not real dangerous. In fact, when I first got there, they wouldn't even let us fly at night. But later on, as they brought more troops over and all that. So I did serve my year. I went back to Travis to fly 141s. I spent assigned to Travis for 18 of those 21 years, plus my six in the Guard. Now, you never got to the story what I'm here for. Why I was in the Guard before I came back in the Air Force. That's where I found out about Air Force guys. I'm in the room with the commander. At the end of the day, the commander comes in and gives you everything we did and what's good and what's not. And he says, hey, I got a telegram here from Washington. They're looking for four crews. That's a pilot and a navigator. To go to some South Sea Island. Now, remember, it's January. It's snowing outside. And he's trying to tell us some South Sea Island. I can't tell you where. It's for maybe a couple months, you know. And so we were all looking, listening to him. And somebody says, I'll go. And pretty soon, you know, everybody's looking. Gee, that sounds good. And I was crazy. You know, so they needed a fourth. And I put my hand up. Well, now I come home, right? And I tell my wife. I said, you know, I just signed up for some special mission. And I didn't say anything more until she asked. I said, yeah, it's someplace in the Pacific. I don't know where. And she said, well, how long? I said, well, it could be a couple of months. Did you say South Pacific? What do you mean, an island? Yeah, some island. You're not going without me. The way she put it was not without me. So I said, well, I don't think families can go. You know, military people do that a lot. Yeah. I already left there a couple of years, you know. So I called up. And somebody says, no, families can't go. And if you want to take them, you're on your own expense. So we did. Two kids I had, dog, piled them into the station wagon, made a box for a top. And we went, and we stopped at Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to fly a new airplane. It's that one you saw, B-57 twin engine. They call it a bomber. I don't know why. It's a British airplane that Martin in Maryland made for us. So I go to Louisville, Kentucky, and I learned to fly a new airplane. I remember it used to rain and sometimes slush outside because it was still late January. And they teach me in 2 weeks how to fly that airplane. Now we're off again someplace else, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, does that ring a bell, New Mexico? I mean, as to what you might be doing? The whole thing was secret. Why was it secret? It was political. Khrushchev and Kennedy were at each other for stop testing atomic bombs. Now, we weren't told all this, you know, being young and dumb. And that's what was going on in Washington, and Khrushchev would not give in. In the meantime, Kennedy says, well, let's prepare just in case he doesn't stop. So that meant the Air Force gets the word to prepare, and it's a big thing to them. So I still didn't know why I was going there, but when I was in Louisville, they told me that you're going to be flying through clouds. And, you know, these scientists like to know what makes up a cloud. And I'm thinking they want to learn how to make rain from clouds, because remember, that was popular.
Yeah.
They put this oxide something in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I guess that's what they're doing. So we're in Albuquerque now, and we go, every day we're practicing, there's a cloud, let's go through it. And everybody goes through, and we test and all that. So we know what we're going to do. We just don't know why. And that was Albuquerque. Ben kiss goodbye and all that. And I'm going on this cargo plane as a passenger to I left out a whole part, Hawaii. I didn't tell her that. And when we got there, we still didn't have the word yet to test. So we were just practicing on clouds over Hawaii. We were allowed to do things like buzz Waikiki. You can't believe what we were allowed to do. So now I really got used to the airplane. And then finally the day came when they said, okay, it's on. What's on? You'll find out when you get there. So we fly our planes there. We land at Christmas Island, which is halfway to Australia. I don't know. I can't remember if I actually flew one or they got me there. So now we get there. We wait a day or two in these old barracks. I mean, with pull chain for showers. and find a cot. There's cots all over the place. There's your sheets and pillowcases. No air conditioned, no louvered windows. It gets pretty windy here. Just louver the window, and that's your air conditioner. So we get settled in on this place, and we have a big mess hall. That's when I find out, we go to this big meeting like you see on television, you know, with the guy up front with a big map and all that. And he says, well, here's what your people are here for. The Department of Atomic Energy has B-52s coming out of Barbers Point, Hawaii. Almost every day they will drop a bomb. It's going to go off over above the water. They call it above water. And you people are going to take off either before or right after it. And you're going to penetrate the cloud. And everybody said, what? And you're going to take a test of the air and bring it back as fast as you can. And that's what we did.
And then there were a few other things they had to do. And we'll hear about that from B-57 pilot Tom DiGiorgio when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.